20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Tuesday. It's not just any Tuesday. It's the Tuesday after day one of the legal tampering period. And nobody better to be joined by than the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. Of course, acmepackingcompany.com, not acmepackingcompany.gov. Justice, how the heck are you doing, my friend? I don't know.
Yeah, or .net. Any of it. Yeah, it's been a long day. I woke up at like 5 in the morning my time to make sure I get up early enough for the Jair news that I was expecting, but apparently no Jair news. Yeah. I guess that's kind of how the day started. That's kind of interesting. I know, was it Domofsky said that they might hold on to him for a while?
Yeah, or just like he was still on the team and that there was nothing immediate happening. And that was kind of, it felt like that was kind of it. That was just like kind of a status update of like, we're still here. No news sort of thing. But yeah, that's how it started. And then we got like a 40-hour Twitter outage and then had to battle all of that. And then just about around like, what, 2:30 Central Time, right around there, we got the Aaron Banks news. And then quickly after, the Nate Hobbs news. And then, obviously TJ Slayton left. We'll talk a little bit about that. But where do you want to begin? How are you feeling overall day one of free agency in the books? Obviously, everything's a whirlwind. How are you feeling about Green Bay's outcome so far?
I said it on Twitter when Twitter worked. My Twitter worked all day. I don't know about you guys.
Weird.
I don't know. I kept sending it in like group chats and people were like, screenshot. And I'm like, what does it look like for you guys? They're like, it's down. And I'm like,
it's dead.
All right. Yeah. Well, it's working for me completely fine. I don't know if it was like a West Coast thing. Is it like different servers or something? I don't know. But yeah, I said there were like, I don't know, maybe 5 contracts that I was like, ah, that sucks. I probably would have done that one. Outside of that, I mean, I know the cap's going up, right? It's gone up. What, it was like 20, 25 million more than what was expected this past year. I think over the last 2 years, it's been like 50 million. Some of that is just like the post-COVID smoothing out of the salary cap. Next year, it's supposed to go up another $25 million. I think it's supposed to go up like 25, 25, then 20 over the next couple ones. But like, just looking at these deals, man, they're like almost not real to me. I don't think mentally I have been able to figure out like what the gauge for a good market is after, you know, back-to-back $25 million increases on the salary cap. But with that being said, I mean, some of these deals like the Banks deal, right? Like he's the 3rd highest paid left guard in the NFL right now. He's the 6th highest paid guard in the NFL in total. He's getting more average per year at least than Elgton Jenkins did, right? Yeah. So that's telling you how fast some of these things are moving. The craziest one to me early on was the Dan Moore Jr. one. I mean, Dan Moore Jr. led the NFL in sacks. A lot of that is because he was the left tackle for a quarterback named Russell Wilson, who has no pocket presence and likes to hold the ball for a long time.
Right.
But he got that mega deal. I was kind of expecting the Patriots to blow their load, honestly, because I know they don't have a left tackle. And, you know, guys like Ronnie Stanley and stuff like that came off the board before free agency even started. So yeah, I just think not the money I'm used to. I mean, maybe you could look at it from a cap percentage and it gets a little bit better, but not a good free agent class. People had a lot of money, so it cost a lot of money to get anything kind of meaningful is kind of my big takeaway from this.
So that being said, and I want to get back to like, who are some of the ones that hurt that you would have been like, all right, I would have been interested in that. But before we get there, like just knowing that this is funny money day, knowing that Green Bay did have some money to spend and did go and spend it on a left guard and a slot corner that sounds like is going to play outside corner. You know, how do you feel overall about the haul that Green Bay was able to get, or if whatever we want to call it, and just kind of in general, how they decided to spend that money on day one?
Yeah, not super shocked. I mean, I thought offensive line would have maybe been a spot where they would have been more like not on the high end, and kind of like pick their spot a little bit. But they, I mean, we talked about this coming into the sort of free agency, right? Where we talked about where do they need bodies? Bodies in terms of like, hey, they could add two guys at this position and it wouldn't mess anything up from their roster construction standpoint, right? And it was always an offensive line, linebacker, and cornerback. Well, they re-signed McDuffie. They just got a corner, just got an offensive lineman. So now you cover your bases a little bit going into the draft. Would have been surprised if they came out without a cornerback, to be really honest, or some sort of clarity on the Jair situation. Little surprised that they didn't get an edge rusher. All the meaningful pass rushers that I know of, unless like, who's the guy for the Eagles who was inactive for the Super Bowl? Bryce Huff. Like maybe he's available in a trade. I'm sure the Eagles are trying to get off of that contract.
I'm sure they would love to. Yeah.
So maybe that's a situation that you could potentially look at. I mean, I'm sure everyone will bring up Trey Hendrickson. Don't got a gas bag about that for too long, but I'm a little surprised they didn't touch edge rusher. You know, as far as their other biggest needs, you know, edge rusher, wide receiver, but we've talked about like DK made sense a lot of in a trade because of what the crop of wide receivers looks like. Maybe an MVS down the line.
The crap of wide receivers.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see the Josh Palmer contract?
I did. That was the Bills, right? Like 12 mil per year, I want to say. Something like that. Three years, 36.
Nuts.
He was somebody that like at the end, I'm like, oh yeah, like he's out there. Like I could have just seen him being like, because he's like 6'2", 200. You know, I could like maybe Green Bay talks themselves into him as like a cheaper option. And then I'm like, oh, even he's going for 12 mil per year. Never mind.
Well, like Ashton Doolin, right, is he basically only plays special teams for the Colts.
4 years, eight, something like that.
Yep. Or no, 2 years, eight. 2 years.
Eight. That's what I meant. Sorry, 2 years, eight. That's what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah. Four per. So special teamers, special team wide receivers. We're talking like a Malik Heath type of guy. That guy.
Did you see Marquise Bell for the Cowboys re-signed? I don't even know if you saw
that one. He didn't play for him.
He didn't play. He played like 40 snaps last year. I'm so mad. I'm like, what are you doing? They gave him like, I don't know, what, like a $4 million per year deal, something like that, like 3 years, 12 or something. And he didn't even play. He played like 700-800 snaps the year before that as like a safety playing linebacker in
I remember. Defense. We ran right at him.
Yeah, ran right at him in Quinn's defense. And then last year they decided to move him back to safety, played him all of like 40 snaps and gave him then like $4 million per year. I'm just like, what is going on right now? I don't understand.
Yeah, the market's all screwy. The only other position that I could have seen Green Bay really spending money was defensive tackle, and there just weren't bodies there. I just think like the draft just makes a lot more sense for that. Unless they wanted to get into like the recently released market where, you know, maybe you're looking at a Grady Jarrett, maybe you're looking at a Jonathan Allen. Outside of that, I didn't really think that.
He's a Bear.
I know. Yeah. That happened quick.
It did happen very fast. Delvin Tomlinson, another one who's getting released, I guess. Yeah.
Yep. From the Bears, or from the Browns. By the way, they said Myles Garrett was going to help them with the pre-free agency plans. They haven't signed a single person. Here's what they've done. They've lost a guard, right?
They traded for Kenny Pickett, though, bud. That's a big deal. Kenny Pickett,
and they've cut Dalvin Tomlinson. Congrats, Myles Garrett. I don't want to hear a second of belly aching when you go down without, you know, any sort of playoff success like Joe Thomas did. I don't want to hear it because you had your opportunity and you took the money. So keep quiet.
Yeah, that whole situation was absurd, beyond absurd. But let's go let's talk through each of these for just a moment here. So Aaron Banks, 4 years, $77 million, has played left guard through basically the entirety of his career, played five snaps of right guard his rookie year, has played every snap of left guard ever since. 6'5", 325 in that range. There's already reports out there from Tom Silverstein that he's going to play left guard. Elton Jenkins is going to play center. I think we can fairly safely assume that Zach Tom's going to play right tackle, would seem that that would mean Rashid at left tackle, maybe battling with Jordan Morgan, Sean Ryan at right guard, battling with Jordan Morgan. And that's probably what you're kind of looking for at the offensive line. Is that what you kind of expect moving forward?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think I don't think they'd bench Rashid. So like if they have an inclination that they want Jordan Morgan to be the left tackle, I think it's you trade Rashid before the draft. I think that's probably the way you handle it. If they keep him, then I'm going to assume going into the season that you're probably going to have that right tackle or right guard rotation again, where it's going to be Ryan and Jordan Morgan, and you try to figure out who the best one of those guys is. I will say, though, the offensive line market, like, get the Zach Tom deal done as quick as possible, and I don't know what you want to do with Rashid, because Rashid is going to get as much as Dan Moore.
Yeah, easily, I would think. Yeah. So, and even like who is the other left tackle who signed? That was who is the 49er who signed with the Chiefs? The backup to Trent Williams,
Jalen Moore. Yeah,
yeah, signed, and he got probably way more than I think kind of expected as well. So, just a quick update: 49ers and Dolphins have each made offers to free agent edge rusher Joey Bosa. For whatever that is worth to anyone Miami in the world.
Miami's weird. Miami has so many pass rushers that they've spent draft picks on. I don't get why they're back in the edge market again. Unless they're trying to move Chubb, but I think they just restructured his deal.
They restructured him, yeah. She said it would be less than $10 million this year for him in either scenario, so it sounds like it's not an exorbitant contract one way or the other.
But this is kind of washed, by the way. Like, I don't know if we'll pay attention. Like, the injuries have stacked up for that guy.
But 1,000 snaps combined in the last 3 years combined. Sorry, 1,000 snaps in the last 3 years combined. It's not going great. Not going great for him. No. Nate Hobbs, 4 years, $48 million. Primarily has been a slot corner as of late. Has played outside corner as well. Early reports this time from Ryan Wood is that he is going to be primarily a outside corner, although I'm sure depending on how the corner room shakes out and injuries and things like that, there's a lot of versatility there. Thoughts in general on the Nate Hobbs signing?
Yeah, so all rookie team, his rookie year in the NFL, played his best season when Bisaccia was the interim head coach. He was a slot then. First year of the next coaching staff, he was an outside corner, didn't shake out so well, ended up going back to the slot for his last 2 years with the Raiders. We talked about him a little bit because he was a guy who kind of like checked off the boxes for like Packers stuff. The thing was, I thought people just viewed him as a slot, and I didn't think the Packers were in Packers were in the market for a slot. So I didn't want to waste any time going in too deep about him. But yeah, I mean,
I was talking to Aaron Nagler about the exact same thing. It was like a red herring of like, if you would have taken that slot piece away, everything else screams Green Bay Packer. Like, he's still on, coming off his first contract. Was he 25, 26 years old? I think in that range. And then has the height, weight, speed with high RAS guy coming out of college. Like, just screams everything else Green Bay Packer. But was primarily a slot. And I'm just like, I just don't see that they're going to do that. But if you take that away and say outside corner, then it's like, okay, it's very clearly obvious that this would be their type of signing.
Yeah. So I think he's going to be interesting. I watched some of his film just cause the signings kind of came back to back. So I guess he was just the more recent one. So that's the one I ended up looking at. Definitely good athleticism. Doesn't have the ball skills that some of these other guys do, right? I think he's going to help you a lot closer to the red zone, because the red zone is, where those like quicker guys kind of, make their money a little bit. Not the biggest dude in the world. I mean, he's certainly not like, he's not 5'9 or anything, but he's not like Richard Sherman either, right? Sure. Honestly, I kind of view him like, he's got some Nixon tendencies and he's got some Jair tendencies, and it's fun to watch it like in a mix. He's kind of like a Debo minus all of those ball skills, which is a big part of a Debo's game.
Sure.
Definitely understand why he went at a different price than a guy like an Adebo did, or even like a Byron Murphy. One thing I did want to bring up before I forget, you know, we were talking about Banks. So Banks was a guy, 2023, started off the season very well. I haven't watched this film. I just remember this narrative arc. And then also I have been texting people and being like people who wouldn't actually know. And I'm like, yo, what do you think about this? Mid-season, he ended up dealing with a turf toe injury that kind of hampered him the entire second half of 2023. Despite that, he was still the number one Pro Bowl getter, like voter for the NFC that 2023 season. He didn't end up going. He ended up being an alternate because, like, the, you know, you start getting in with the coaches and, you know, the coaches and the players vote, and it's, sure, you know, one third. Comes into this year. He breaks his finger in the summer, and he deals with that and plays through it that the entire year. And then at the very end, he ends up having the MCL. I think he had a concussion at some point this past year too. Everything I've heard is just like, yeah, he's tough as nails, like fights through everything to stay on the field, all that stuff. But it was also told, like, basically like the last year and a half of his film is not his best work because he's been like physically limited with injuries that are, you know, not expected to be sort of long-term concerns. So to a certain extent, like, we kind of had these narratives with like Josh Jacobs too, right? Yep. Where, you know, Josh Jacobs wasn't coming off of his best season when he signed with the Packers. With that being said, that contract number still shocking. Like right now, I'm like, whoa, that's still so much money. I mean, I think we mentioned like some pie in the sky type of signings, and I was like, I don't know, maybe Trey Smith. I wasn't expecting them giving all the money to Aaron Banks. So
I did not see it coming as well. I'll be fully transparent. I've got through like the first like 7-8-ish games of 2024. And again, as you mentioned, there's some injuries there. I'm on game 8. So I'm through 7 games of 2024. And I want to go back and look at it in far more detail. I'm not going to make any over sweeping proclamations at this point. This is a guy I liked a lot coming out of the draft. So if anything, I would love to confirm my priors and be like, look how smart I was. I loved him in the draft and look how good he is now. I was very underwhelmed with his tape from 2024, just very inconsistent. I wanted to see him anchor better. I really wanted to see him just latch on to people and use that size and that bulk a little bit more. Really good mover in space. Like, he was doing some stuff pulling from, you know, in that San Francisco offense, which, you know, is pretty much a requirement of them. That was very impressive for 325. Some really good combo block stuff where, you know, center gets up on the first player, gets a little movement, and then he's able to use his movement skills to come around and seal that block with relative ease. So again, some stuff that's easily translatable. And you just look at him and you go 6'5", 325 with that movement ability. And man, he looks the part immediately. But very, 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 very inconsistent and just really kind of left me wanting more, which is, again, modern offensive line is not necessarily that out of the norm, so to speak. But to your point, when you start putting a $77 million with 477, right? 4 for 77 for that on top of it and making him a massive free agent signing, it's a little bit of a tougher pill to swallow. So all of the freaking talent is there. There's no question about it. Like you said, you love the mentality. There's the very first play. One of the first plays I watched, he comes on a little pull and the defensive end's coming and he's cracking the defensive end and he just stonewalls the defensive end and then just drives him in the other direction. Had two snaps against Chris Jones against KC where he just took Chris freaking Jones and just moved him out of the play. So, I mean, like there's some rare stuff there where you're just not seeing some of this stuff all the time, but man, if you could just get the consistency down, you have a freaking unbelievable player on your hand.
Yeah. And I do wonder, like, I think we've had these conversations before where we've talked about like, what is pressure? Right. And, you know, if you start pushing guys back, is that a pressure? This, you know, is it the same thing for every quarterback? Because certain things seem to be affecting Jordan Love that is not being considered pressure.
Right.
For other quarterbacks. Right. And having a big guy up front, I think will help with some of that. The other thing too is just the run game. I think the fact that they couldn't run the ball against the Eagles is probably the biggest takeaway that, you know, Matt LaFleur is going into the offseason with, where he's like, dude, that cannot happen again. that there's just no way that that can happen again. And obviously, some stuff doesn't break your way, like that Keyshawn fumble, not fumble recovery, all that stuff on the first play of the game. But I think, like, just the prospect of, like, what if we go small on the offensive line like we have been for X amount of 20 years and getting agile guys who are really good, you know, quote unquote, really good pass protectors, and like, oh, our field stretcher might have to be Bolt Melton. And we also have Jaden Reed out there at receiver. We can't block anyone on the perimeter. Oh, we have small guys. We can't block anyone on the interior. Uh-oh, where does the run game go? I think, you know, Goot said that, like, he doesn't adjust for scheme and stuff, which I think is crazy, and I don't even know if I believe him when he said that at the combine. But I do think that there should probably be a real conversation about what the offensive line has looked like in the past, even though that they've had success with that mold, and what it should look like moving forward. Because when Mike McCarthy came into the NFL and took over as the head coach, that was a revolutionary offense. The fact that they were in shotgun so much and they were passing so much. Like, I know everything got stale because the rest of the league caught up to him. And by the end, I mean, what, he was canned probably 4 years after the, like, RPO revolution really started, right? Like, that's how long he had lasted, where he was the guy who took West Coast quick game into the shotgun instead of just being split backs under center. So they were a pass happy team, and they could find athletic, undervalued offensive linemen who could fit that mold. And, you know, never really had a dominant run game. I mean, it was like 1-2 years of Eddie Lacy, a couple nice seasons of Ryan Grant being kind of like a home run guy, right? But outside of that, you know, they weren't like a ground and pound team. They certainly weren't run first. And I think LaFleur, to his core, wants to be a run first, wants to run a run first offense. And everything in the passing game is built off of that. So if you can't move people in the run game, it becomes a real big problem. So I understand if they were, you know, had a hole burning in their pocket and were like, look, that's a starting offensive lineman. He's already been in the scheme before. He's, you know, X amount of it. Like, he's only like 28
in September. Yep.
He was a former, you know, like mid high second round pick. I mean, he was picked a couple selections before Josh Myers, right? Let's just go grab the guy. And I can understand them doing that because, again, I don't think, like, their cap situation, they can move money around if they want to. They're in a good spot now. So, like,
for sure,
the immediate cap hit of what he looks like in year one doesn't worry me. The other thing that I would point to people on some of this stuff, you'll see a lot of people signing 3-year contracts now. And I don't know if people have paid attention long enough. That's not how it used to be. And the Packers are still signing 4-year contracts with guys. And they're still not giving guarantees beyond the signing bonus, which is not to say, that's not to say it's a bad thing. Like, giving someone a signing bonus is like the opposite of the Bengals problem, where the Bengals are just trying to pay everything in salary and give you no money up front, and they'll guarantee the salary. But they're like, yo, we don't, like, have this today. Or at least Mike Brown doesn't want to spend this today. The Packers are like, look, we'll give you the money up front, and then after that, you're earning everything from, you know, basically after the first season. I thought that was pretty notable. Because you're seeing a lot of, like, even like Chase Young just signed, right? Chase Young signed a 3-year New Orleans Saints. Chase Young technically wouldn't have been a free agent until end of day Tuesday, because of the void year and when it triggers in his contract. But if he signed with the New Orleans Saints, he signed a 3-year deal. And when it gets tweeted out, they mention, yeah, and he'll be able to hit the market again when he's 28 years old. And that's not something you're able to say if, you know, you sign with the Green Bay Packers. So I do wonder if that kind of limits what they want to do. But especially with the cap rising year to year, I do think that the players who are open, and I guess agents who are open to signing these 4-year contracts, could provide a lot of value in the back end of the deal for the Packers.
89 free agents. This is per Spotrac that I'm looking at right now. 89 free agents agreed to contracts already. Do you want to guess how many are 5 years or longer?
Oh, 5 years? I mean, Josh Allen signed one, but he was a free agent.
Just free agents. Just free agents.
Did You're any right. of them?
No, none.
You're okay. Right. I was like,
do you want, of the 89, how many do you think were 4 years or more?
Man, it might be less than 10.
Six. And two of them are Green Bay Packers. So Milton Williams, New England, Dan Moore for Tennessee, Aaron Banks for Green Bay, Josh Sweat for Arizona, Cam Bynum for the Colts, Nate Hobbs for the Packers. Yep. And it does, like, basically, and again, we'll see what the contracts actually look like. But if you kind of go back, especially look at the Josh Jacobs one.
Both of them, when they got announced, it's just the signing bonus that's guaranteed.
Yes. So it basically amounts to team options year over year over year. Mm-hmm. Because if you, like you said, you pay the signing bonus up front. And then once you get to the future years, if you want to move on, it's basically the team's choice if they want to keep you for the contract that you've signed or move on and just take the dead cap hit from the signing bonus that you already paid for.
Like, if they wanted to, they could July 1st Josh Jacobs' contract.
Josh Jacobs this year. Yep, for sure. Yep. No question about it.
They're not going to. They don't want to. Nope. But they have the option to do that. Yeah, so
team,
like,
option basically every year after year one. And again, we'll see how these are exactly set up, but it basically amounts to team options every year after year one. And that's a really good thing if you're the Packers and you can get it to set up that way.
So again, yeah, I mean, that's just one thing I want to put on people's radars, is just like the contract structure is being, it's pretty specific. And I just don't know, I can't tell you one way or another whether that's something that, well, I would assume that it's not, it's something that they wouldn't want representation, because if it's a, right, if you're measuring things by average per year APY, which is what gets people going, people, yep, care about that for some reason. If I mean, it matters. If I were an agent, I would probably care way more about probably not over 3 years. I would probably care about how much money you can make in the first 2 years. Cap, not cap.
That and total guarantees, yeah.
Yeah, cash. I'd probably care about that the most. And then, you know, you stretch out these deals, well, it escalates even more. So if your salary is, you know, 1,357 versus 1,59, right, that cash is coming in slower on the front end. The Packers are stretching that out. And that's why I'm saying, like, it provides value more in the back end of those contracts where, you know, they are these team options. You can leverage them. You can do these things. I just don't know how many of the people who signed these big deals today are willing to sign those 4-year contracts, or if they want to go the Chase Young route where, hey, I want to hit the market again when I'm 28, because I'll still be in my prime at 28. And I don't know if I'm going to be in my prime at 29, 30. Right.
Yep.
So just something worth putting on your radar. I mean, I'm sure it's something that, like, GMs and stuff are paying attention to, as far as like the average fan, and most media people probably don't care too much, but I did the tracker for us today at APC, and we got everything up, and I'm just seeing, you know, 2 year, 3 year, 2 year, 3 year, 2 year, 3 year. And I'm like, both of the Packers are fours. That's pretty out of the ordinary, but that's how it used to be. I mean,
yeah,
probably pre COVID, I would say there's 4 year contracts and people were just signing them, but people want to get to market more because the cap is rising and all that stuff. I understand it from a representation standpoint, but I also understand why the Packers are like, well, it'd be nice if we didn't have to give up all this leverage.
So you mentioned that there were a handful of deals that you really liked that were out there. What were some of the deals that maybe you wish Green Bay would have taken a little bit further interest in?
All right. I'm looking right now. The Chris Godwin one just isn't going to happen, right? I mean, he went back to Tampa, but I think that was a good number. 22 yep. million per year for him. I was really
surprised. Was that three for 66?
Yep, 3 for 66. I was looking to the, man, the offensive line stuff was nuts. Probably no offensive line, but I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
I would have looked at Grady Jarrett and seen what the market could have been for him. I don't think the TJ Slayton deal was bad for Cincinnati. I just don't think I probably would have taken a defensive tackle again outside of Grady Jarrett and maybe like Jonathan Allen because of how strong this draft class was. Like maybe if you were down a day two pick, I'd look at the defensive tackle market just because you'll have fewer shots at it. The edge rushers, man, like Chase Young, I probably would have done that. I was pretty surprised the Dayo Dangbo contract wasn't what it was reported. I mean, everyone the week leading up to free agency was like, he's actually going to get $25 million per year. You're like, what is happening? And yeah, they linked him to, you know, Packers, Commanders, Niners, kind of all sort of relatively the same defense. I mean, they're all coming off of that Seahawks tree, right? And Odengbo had played for Gus Bradley and all that stuff. But he ended up signing with the Chicago Bears. Pretty happy about that. I didn't think he was a great football player, and I didn't want to have to pretend that he was. He's weird.
He's a really interesting player.
He's like a slightly above average interior pass rusher, but you can only play him on pass rushing downs. And then on the edge, he's just not good. He can twist and he can chase, but he's not creating any of his own pressure or anything like that. The Paulson Adebo one almost made me have a heart attack when it was initially reported as a 3-year, $30 million contract.
Yeah,
I was pissed, dude. I was like, $10 million. He's probably like, we talked about him a lot. You know, he's probably number two on my cornerback board. Like, it would have been Murphy, and then it would have been him. And then the number got corrected, and it was like, oh, yeah, no, he got paid the money he should have. But I was pretty hot, to be honest, about that one for a while. You know, some of, like, the Byron Murphy contract, I would have done that too, but he never hit the market.
$22 million. You would have done 22 for Murphy.
I mean, it's $6 million more than Charvarius Ward over the same life of the deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't as sold on DJ Reed as other people were.
Same
as part of it, like the age thing, the size thing. Like,
I can't imagine Green Bay was ever ultra interested in him. Like, I don't know. I can't piece it together. But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Hufanga. I actually really like what the Broncos did today, man. Hufanga, and then they got Dre Greenlaw too.
They're looking at what's his face from Jacksonville, Evan Ingram too, which would fit very well in Sean Payton's offense.
Yeah. So yeah, I honestly there's only a couple deals that I like this whole day, and the Broncos got two of them. So if we're doing free agent grades, giving them A+, I guess, on the relative scale.
There wasn't much for me as I was kind of going through everything and just being like, all right, are these, and again, I think part of it is just, again, adjusting to the new salary cap and like what these numbers are going to be for some of these players. But as I was just kind of going through everything, there's deals that I would have been totally fine with. Probably would have been fine.
Like the Sweat deal, maybe. Like, I might have done the Sweat deal.
I was just going to say, like, I would have definitely done Sweat.
The ones I got excited about, I was like, how did Dre Greenlaw get less than Nick Bolton? That's crazy. Which, yeah, by the way, if we're pocket watching and all that stuff, Coy Walker, look at the Nick Bolton deal, right? That's what it's going to cost, $15 million per. Yep. I liked Hufanga. No, like all pro safety. You got him for $15 million per when bad tackles are going for way, 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 way higher than that. I like the Chase Young deal. I like the Murphy deal. Maybe I only like four of them. Maybe that was it, but I like those ones.
Do you want to hear my free agent take and what I'm a little bit bummed out by? I am a pretty firm believer that never go mid-tier free agent shopping. I think you should go and get the big time players when they're available in free agency, even if you have to overspend for them, because elite level players, and I get this free agency class is a very bizarre one, But those level players are really hard to find and actually change you in a very significant way. And even more so for the Packers, because they are a team that seemingly can find good players almost anywhere, but have really struggled to find elite players. Other, like, you look at their two, arguably their two best players last year, Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs were the two guys that they found in free agency last year. I'm just definitely more of a believer of go aggressive. Like, you know, sort of like the idea, you know, this is again a trade involved in this too, but DK Metcalf's at 30 mil per year, right? You look at Tutu Atwell's at 10 mil per year, and you can start stacking three of these 10 million per year deals. Or if, like, you go get a Dan Moore and a Tutu Atwell, you're at 25 mil already. You add a TJ Slayton to that, right? TJ Slayton, Dan Moore, Tutu Atwell, you're over more per year. And I get the length of the contract, I get all of it, but you're at more per year than what DK Metcalf would get. And if you did, like, if the very next day you acquired DK Metcalf, and then some team was like, guess what? We're going to trade you Tutu Atwell, Dan Moore, and TJ Slayton for DK Metcalf, the team with DK Metcalf would laugh at you and be like, you're kidding, right? We're not even remotely going to do this deal. And I get there's more logistics that go on, but that's my overarching philosophy, is go very aggressive and get the guys that really matter. And I feel, and again, I haven't watched Hobbs yet. I've watched half of a season of Banks, so I'm not going to make any sweeping conclusions here, but there's definitely a piece of me that is a little bit more of like, I've left wanting just a little bit more, something a little bit more choice, if you will, than maybe what Green Bay got.
Yeah. And I don't know, because it's hard to know what Hobbs is going to be like once he's full-time outside in a better scheme with this coaching staff that has turned it around with Keyshawn and all this stuff. Like, a guy who, you know, kind of had a similar background a little bit. I mean, down to even being former Bisaccia Raiders.
Right.
Panning out. But I really do think, like, I expected more out of them in the cornerback market. I really thought they would have been. I mean, Murphy wasn't ever on the table, but, like, Adebo was out there. I would have thought, you know, maybe. And some of this stuff can get weird too, especially with medicals. Like, maybe they wanted to bring him in, and the Debo found a team that didn't want to bring him in, so he just signed with the team that didn't want to bring him in, because, you know, the money dries up quick, right? I guess one thing that they have moving forward is, like, the Jair Alexander situation, and they don't have to get rid of him necessarily. I know it's been reported that, like, they're not going to ask him for a pay cut. But maybe that changes depending on, you know, what they kind of landed on at the cornerback market. I'm not, like, disappointed. I just have, like, more questions at corner than anything else.
Sure.
Offensive line, they took a bigger swing than I thought they were going to take, right or wrong. And then edge rusher is the only one that I'm like, uh-oh, things are moving quick.
Yeah, as we're recording, it's basically Trey Hendrickson and then, you know, an Azeez Ojulari. I know some people are interested in. That doesn't do it for me either. That's kind of it. Then you get very slim pickings very fast after that. Chauncey Golston for the Cowboys. I think he's still out there. No, exactly. They're just rotational pieces that you already have.
This is where I'm like, yo, maybe call the Eagles about Bryce Huff. Like, that's kind of... Well, Uche's out there, right?
Uche is out there, yep.
Like, maybe him.
They could have had him for what, like a seventh round pick or something. He went for nothing when he got traded a couple months ago or whatever. So,
yeah. Well, to be fair, they didn't have a seventh round pick at that point. So
that's true. It might not have been seventh either. It was definitely like a day three nothing selection, though. Yeah. I'm not frustrated, mad, you know, anything like that. Just a little slightly underwhelmed of what I was maybe hoping for, a little bit more on top of it, but excited to see both of these players a little bit more, and maybe I'll completely feel different once I've watched a little bit more tape.
I will say this does open them up for a lot more flexibility moving forward, because, you know, signing these 4-year contracts, all this stuff, you can get out of them with the June 1. If you like the guy, you can convert it and basically turn it into another bonus that doesn't hurt you.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a scenario popping up. And then, you know, who are all the guys who are up? Tom Walker. Yeah, two Walkers. Quay and Rasheed. So, like, they're all due money. Oh, Dobbs, Christian Watson, you know, all these guys are going to have to get paid at some point. So maybe going a little less now helps you down in the long run. Well, I guess we'll find out.
Speak his name and things will appear. Chauncey Golston, 3-year, $19.5 million deal with the New York Giants. So he is there. He's off the market too. There you go. Giants fixed everything.
Yeah. I do wonder, like, because they have Burns, right? So they got Burns, they got Kayvon.
Yeah.
Is there another one? No, they had Ojulari.
Ojulari would be another one, yeah. So is there anyone left that's out there still that you have interest in? Anyone that you would still be willing to spend money on? Like, who's the Justice Mosqueda pick of the remaining free agents, at least as we're recording this? Probably gone by the time people listen.
All right. So we'd be looking at wide receiver and edge rusher.
Or defensive tackle, maybe, but you're, like you said, probably via the draft. Right,
at this point, no.
Yep.
Let me go through. So Amari's halfway interesting. I know he had a bunch of drops last year, but I think as like a spot guy who you only need for a season as kind of like a ringer, I think he would be halfway interesting. MVS is just like my break in case of emergency wide receiver at this point. My break in case of you don't want to spend a first round pick on Aumanor or Higgins in the draft. Sure. Uche, I'd be interested in him. At least he can brush the passer a little bit. After that, man, I mean, can Brandon Cooks still run? I don't know if Brandon Cooks can still run. Maybe him.
Yeah.
I think that is where I end up tapping out.
You're not on my Nick Westbrook Akina train? You don't want to get in the Nick Westbrook Akina action?
Not really, man. I'd probably rather keep it open for a draft pick or MVS. Like, MVS has already been in the system.
I'm in agreement.
That was the only one. Like, MVS, I think, like, he's going to cost you like 4 a year or something, maybe five. But
yeah, totally agreed. Any other positions of like, yeah.
There's not much out there. Because I don't think, because what, we added the corner, we added the offensive lineman. We're already asking if we're going to bench the first-round pick offensive lineman for a second year. Cornerback is an absolute long jam. I know people are like, well, what does this mean for Keyshawn in the slot? Dude, Keyshawn might still be CB1. If Keyshawn was a free agent right now after the year that he just had, he gets a lot more than the six per year or whatever that he signed with last season. So I think it's going to be Nixon and Hobbs as the outside corners.
I think kind of,
I joked on Twitter, but I was like halfway serious. I was like, I don't have to watch corners this year. Great for the draft. I just don't think it's going to happen probably in the first three rounds unless one guy ends up dropping and it's kind of like a perfect fit type thing. And I don't think this corner class is deep enough where that's, you know, it's not going to be like a BPA type of situation.
You wouldn't think so, no.
So I think they're done in the secondary. Linebacker, they got three guys that they're paying already.
Yep. And a third round pick, even though we disagree of the value. Right. Yes.
Right. So yeah, I mean, honestly, like it's the lines and it's, you know, a speed wide receiver. And spoiler alert, if you haven't, you know, if you're hearing about free agency news for the first time via this podcast, the guys on the lines got paid a lot of money to come off the board super early today. So it's pretty slim pickings.
Levi Nwuzurike would be the only one that I would have some consideration on, maybe, yeah, that's left. But again, I'm still
even, probably... Yeah, but even then, it's like, I'm going to pay you so that I don't spend a draft pick in the second round on a defensive tackle. Like,
yep,
that's where the meat of the draft is. So why am I doing that?
And he's more of the three technique, and you already have Wooden, Brooks, and, you know, Devontae Wyatt, too. So it doesn't solve a ton of your overall issue. So I'd be fine with it, like, depending on what the cost was. Like, it's an interesting signing if you have the money and he's the best player left and they're open to it, whatever. But that'd be the only other guy that's out there that I'm like, oh, I'd have some interest in, at least off like the top of my head.
Yeah. No, that checks out for sure. I was surprised about the Kinlaw contract.
This is one of the crazier ones. There wasn't a ton that completely blew my mind, but that was definitely one of them where I'm like, wow, that's a crazy amount of money for a guy that's been very banged up as of late and is on a little bit on the older side as well. And defensive tackle, which is a very, again, key position in this draft.
Yeah,
for sure.
Wouldn't you rather just keep Jonathan Allen for the year that he had left at that point than just going Kinlaw?
I don't know what the hell they're doing, because they also made that Tunsil trade, and Tunsil, no one was more penalized than Tunsil last year. I think Tunsil was part of the problem in Houston. I kind of like the trade for Houston. I just don't like the quotes that came out after, where, you know, Aaron Wilson, who's a reporter down in Houston, was like, yeah, they just wanted to get cheaper off the offensive line. They spent a lot of assets there. It was like, okay, the wrong lesson. Wrong lesson. Like, you were not bad on the offensive line because you spent so much money. You were bad on the offensive line because you picked the wrong players. Like, that's what went wrong.
Because they released Shaq Kenyon Green,
like, 14th overall after a bunch of Pro Bowlers. That's how you messed up on the offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah, they released Shaq Mason as well. It's like they maybe got to the right conclusion, but you looked at their work and you're like, the work is all wrong. You've used the wrong formula. You did everything wrong. You might have got to the wrong or the right answer, but in all the wrong ways. Also, just kind
of I'm not sold on Casario either, by the way. Like, the waiver pickup of Christian Kirk was super weird to me, because he's a slot only guy who can't really
run. Not even a waiver. They traded a 7th round pick for him.
True. Yes, it was that. I thought it was, for some reason, my brain.
It's a 7th round pick. It's the exact same thing. But ultimately, yeah.
But they're running our scheme now. Could you imagine if Jaden Reed couldn't run?
It would not be great.
Playing in the slot? Yeah, that would not be good. So that's kind of what they're doing. And they're paying a lot of decent money to have the privilege of paying him those game checks. So I don't get that at all. I'm selling on Houston right now.
Your Jacksonville was so willing to do, they traded him in the division and took a 7th round pick to be like, yeah, well, you can have him. You're like, we'll gladly trade him in the division and only take a 7th round pick in return. And they were still fine with it. So that kind of tells you all you need to know about that situation.
Yeah. Jags were weird today too, by the way.
Were they the ones that signed like 12 guys today?
Yeah, it was very like Washington Commanders, where they were like, look, we're not gonna spend a lot of money on top guys, but we're just gonna try to churn this entire roster and make low-level bets that we hope pan out like 2 years from now.
Yeah, I guess. I hate that version of free agency, and I get like they're in a different world right now than a lot of other teams, certainly than like the Green Bay Packers, but I still hate that. Like, go get really good players when you can and don't settle for that, but it is what it is. Just kind of thoughts on the state of the Packers roster. I know you were kind of looking at the remaining 53-man players that are left over from last year, plus obviously Hobbs and Banks. How are you feeling about the roster as of right now?
Yeah, pretty good. So just like numbers wise, right? They could run a team right now. They got 9 offensive linemen coming back from the 53 and, you know, the free agent signing at least 4 of everything other than quarterback and tight end. And I don't know if they're going to need those numbers. Also, John Fitzpatrick is a restricted free agent. He's not going to get tendered by the Packers. He might come back as UFA because he ended up really passing Ben Sims on like the special teams depth chart at the end of the year. So you're talking about 4 players at, you know, each position individually, and then offensive line, you have 9 guys, right? That you could play a football game right now. So I counted it between the guys coming back from the 53-man roster, and I'm including the IR on that, and then the 2 free agent signings, they're at 49 guys with 8 roster spots. So there's going to be a good amount of churn on this roster, even if they make those picks, which is why I think, you know, kind of being in the trade market potentially for one of those edge rushers, right? Trey Hendrickson, Bryce Huff, one of those guys. Like, I think it makes sense to just kind of secure that body if you have the cap space for it.
How much different would it look if all of a sudden they got Trey Hendrickson, Hobbs, and Banks this offseason as the three? You don't think it changes things that much?
Okay. So starting lineup, offense, Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, probably Dobbs, Wicks, Reed at receiver, Kraft, Walker, Banks, Jenkins, Morgan, Tom on the offensive line. So yeah, you're probably maybe wide receiver. You still have the opportunity to improve via the draft. Defensive line, we got Gary – one of those edge rushers, Clark.
Wyatt.
I guess you play Wyatt. I still think, like, at this point, like, I'm expecting either the first or second to be a defensive tackle.
Just throw Derek Harmon in there.
Yeah, let's go Ducks. Keyshawn Nixon and Hobbs at outside corner is what I'm assuming is going to happen. Bullard in slot. McKinney, Evan Williams at safety. I mean, really the only spot that you're going to prove at is defensive tackle. So, yeah, I mean, really they'd be going into the draft in a pretty good spot where you just need to add a field stretcher, which, you know, there it is limited at that spot. And then probably a defensive tackle pretty early on that you want to add into the rotation. Because I'm not sure, like, how much longer you really even want to keep, like, Carl Brooks as, like, your DT3 and Kobe Wooden. Do you want to roster that guy?
Wooden should have to earn his job already. Like, Wooden should very much have to earn his job this offseason. And I'm fine with Brooks as, like, your DT5 or whatever. Is like, and I still think there's something there. But you're not making any long-term decisions based on either of those guys.
No. Yeah, I think Brooks is probably a catch and release type of guy if we're talking contract wise. So yeah, I mean you're basically going into the draft saying, like, hey, I need speed at receiver and I need a defensive tackle in a class where it's really deep in defensive tackle. You could throw a rock and you could hit a defensive tackle. And then moving forward, you just gotta get deals done with both Walkers and the receivers.
Yeah.
Probably one of the receivers. Good luck guessing which one. I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, long-term outlook, good for sure.
No, I agree. She was going to go somewhere with that. And I don't remember where the heck I was going to go with it.
Hendrickson?
No, it wasn't Hendrickson, although I am still very, very excited about Hendrickson as well. Oh, did you hear my – I don't know if you probably didn't, but my outside-the-box wide receiver that I think would make some sense. I don't think they'd trade him. I don't think it's a trade. I don't think that they.
Give me a division.
NFC South.
London?
Close. Right team. Darnell Mooney.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they would trade him. He was second in the league in 20-plus yard receptions last year. He was like top 10 in yards per reception. Had a really nice year with the corpse of Kirk Cousins as quarterback, throwing him the ball for the most part. And the contract now, it's like $9 million this year and $10 million next year for the acquiring team, which now looks like a golden contract.
Tutu's getting that, so like,
I'd rather
have Booty than Tutu. So
yeah. So like, again, I don't know what it would cost, and they're just with Penix there, and you know, like they probably just hang on to him. But that would be a player for me that I would sincerely just call about and be like, he's not Green Bay's type. He's a little bit undersized for what they normally like. He's not a great run blocker on the outside. I don't see it happening, but I just think if you want to get creative with a field stretcher, again, that's on actually now a very reasonable contract over the next 2 years. That would be one that I would at least call about if I were Green Bay.
And the good thing is, like, you don't even necessarily have to have him be like a starter.
No, just you have a role for him.
Yeah, I mean, he would basically, I would guess, just kind of take like Bo Melton's spot on the roster and just be worked in a little bit more. One thing that I will say, again, just from a roster construction standpoint, because I don't know how close some people are paying attention to these things. If we have a different special teams coordinator, we're probably looking at stuff on the lower end of the roster at wide receiver a little bit differently. I don't know that, like, without Bisaccia, who's so heavy into using all of these safeties on special teams and cornerbacks and stuff like that, that you could afford for your, you know, wide receiver four, like to be a Darnell Mooney type of guy. But the Packers are in that spot now where they're freed up to be able to do that. And that's kind of, you know, I mean, you wonder sometimes, I'm sure people are like, well, why aren't teams calling every free agent? Why aren't they gauging interest in everyone? Isn't that, you know, wouldn't that be better to know what the entire market looks like? And it's like, well, sometimes you're just not in on a guy. That's why if you look at any of these draft boards that end up getting leaked, Jerry Jones will do it every 2 years or so. It's like 100 guys on that draft board because you're like whittling it down to like what we need this second. Like we've scouted everyone. but these are the guys that we could potentially need immediately. And that's how we have to focus and navigate around all this stuff.
It's a beautiful world out there, Justice. And we're going to have day two, obviously, tomorrow, which, again, this is the most, I think, picked over I've seen a free agent class after day one.
It's like Javon Holland and some receivers, some old receivers.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, some old wide receivers and Javon Holland, and that is about it. A Trey Hendrickson trade maybe still lurking out there. Yeah, good luck. Like the two people.
Yeah, I mean, if Jair gets cut right now, he's
piranha fest.
Second best player on the market, minimum.
Like, if you're willing to take the risk on the injuries, no question about it. I mean, easily. And I mean, if you're at that point, yeah, he's probably still behind Holland, but yeah, it's not by much at that point.
No. So yeah, sure. I would expect at this point, earliest he gets cut is the draft. I would expect a trade at this point.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And again, if you're going to wait till that, like wait until like day three of the draft and hope that some team didn't hit free agency at corner and then they struck out corner in the draft. And if, you know, day three of the draft comes and some team looks at their depth chart and they're like, oh crap, like we did not hit corner the way that we were hoping to. Send a fourth, send a fifth, whatever. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I would do if I were Green Bay. There's no real need to rush it. They're not going to need the $7 million he's going to clear on the cap this year. So take your time. Do what you need to do. All right, friend, you are the absolute best. Where can we find all of your incredible work per usual?
AcmePackingCompany.com. We had the tracker up today. I'm sure we're going to pump out a bunch of stuff. We'll probably have the tracker up tomorrow too, in case Twitter and all that stuff ends up failing everyone except for me. So I'm the only person who can give you the news.
I think you did it. I think that if you're the only one left, I think you're culpable at that point.
Yeah. I serve my people. I serve my people. Yeah. I was getting all the news up. So check it out.
Amazing. We appreciate you. Thank you as always for joining. And I'm sure we'll talk to you next week. And who knows, maybe we're talking about Trey Hendrickson at that point in time. Go follow him at JUMOSQ.
Or Bryce Huff.
Huff's under. There's no way they're going to go for Huff. What is Huff like? 240 pounds dripping wet. Bryce Huff is. Oh, he's 255. Okay, no, you're right.
He's pass pressure.
I'm wrong. I'll take. He played it back.
For Bob Sala. Come on.
You're right.
He can
you're
do
right.
it.
I'm wrong. All right. Follow him at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.